Hello and welcome to episode 13 of Rethinking Work. We have another
13 already.
And talking of world travel guests, this is episode 3 of series 2. We have Montreal, we have Toronto, and Andrew Barnes is on this week's episode. He is the author of The 4-Day Week, which, depending on your view, is going to be one of the most controversial topics we apparently have had on this podcast. Everyone we've spoken to has quite a strong view. Andrew was all the way over from Auckland, now our officially most traveled guest. We talk a little bit about New Zealand, but most of all, we talk about, in his view, the power of the 4-day work week. And I think series one of our podcast was all about rethinking work, and hybrid working seems to be here to stay. But this could be seen as a sort of alternative example where everyone comes into the office, but only 4 days a week, and you gift this extra time back. And it was fascinating hearing his views and all the tests and all the studies he's done. So we really go into detail about what that means for your company. Are you sort of, he prods you, are you brave enough to attempt a 4-day work week? And it really does bring out a lot of different views and opinions, and where we really go into a lot of detail about it. I really thought you'd say something.
Oh, no.
Do you have anything to say, Bill?
No, I've thought about it. I mean, we would like to do it, and I know a few people that do the 9-day fortnight, which is the intro to it. I'm in the middle of it. I'm one of the few people that doesn't have a strong view either way, but I think it's part of the package that you're starting to offer people to attract talent. And I'm interested about whether people will be able to keep this in this sort of impending recession that everybody's talking ourselves into. So, yeah, it's very, very pertinent.
So please comment, because we do think in the war on talent, it is fascinating. It is an amazing time to try and retain staff and try and bring more stuff back. So enjoy the episode. We're Able Partners. We're an architecture practice. Go to our website at ablepartners.co.uk and find us on Instagram at able_partners. Enjoy the episode. I did an accident last time we did a podcast. We had a nice rehearsed intro and then I completely missed it because I was too overexcited. So I've learned my lesson this time to be much calmer. Thank you for coming on Rethinking Work. This is the second series of our podcast. And we had someone on last week who was from Montreal. And for the 1 week, he was the furthest traveling person to come on our podcast. You're from Auckland, or you've traveled from Auckland.
Exclusively.
Just live for 1 week only.
What brings you to London first?
I have family here. My dad's 94. He's up in Yorkshire, so I have to come back for that. And I have kids at school still in Surrey, the most boring county in England.
There are other counties.
Shots fired. You're a seasoned pro at this, but we've Bill and I have been chatting lots about the 4-day week book that you wrote. And I watched a TED talk on the way back from MIPIN earlier this year, which you did, which I thought was so interesting. We had some guests on earlier, like last series, and they have a sort of flexible Friday. So it was in the back of my head. And Bill and I have slightly differing views on this, which I thought Bill would like to. I think from a creativity point of view, I understand how a 4-day work week could be very beneficial. However, Bill's run a studio in Beijing. He's been on the NBA, big tech companies.
Am I being billed as the sort of stuffy boomer here? That's a mischaracterization.
Have I mischaracterized it?
I'd like to
your rebuttal.
Unpick this a little bit. So tell us about this. Yeah, tell us what your perception of like a 4-day week is and what the drivers behind this are.
Look, I think the key thing to do here is to go back to the beginning. What was this about? And what this was about for me, quite simply, was reading some articles about true productivity in the workplace. And those research reports were basically saying that people were productive for 2.5 to 3 hours a day. In fact, if you're Canadian, 1.5 hours a day. So
more shots fired.
But the key thing is then I sat back and said, right, okay, why is that happening? What is it that is impacting productivity? And because people will say that they're terribly busy. So what's the difference? And is this happening in my business? So I thought, well, the only way to find out would be to run an experiment. And the experiment basically was to say to the team, look, I'll pay you for 5 days. I only want you to work for 80% of the time, 4 days. But I need to get 100% productivity. I need to make sure that customer service is maintained.
And there's a bit of background. You're in the fintech business.
I have a bit of fintech. I have legal services. The organization we experimented on was, you know, 130-year-old trust company in New Zealand. So very, very traditional. Ran retail branches, had a call center, but at the same time, you know, was billing people by the hour as well, like a like an architecture practice or indeed a law firm. So we had a lot of the characteristics that people would say that you can't do this. Anyhow, so I basically gave the challenge to the team and said, look, what will you do differently? How will you do things differently in order to do your job in 4 days rather than five? Go ahead, let's give it a go. And the results were quietly extraordinary. So our engagement scores went up 40%. Our stress levels dropped 15%. More people said they could do their job better working 4 days rather than five. And our overall productivity went up to 120% of what it was before.
So it's even factoring in the reduction of, as you say, 20% of the time they're in the office.
Yes, because what happens is the modern office is an appalling place to work if you're trying to be productive. So statistically, in an open plan office, you are going to be interrupted once every 11 minutes and it will take you 22 minutes to get back to full productivity. So if you give somebody a quiet hour where they don't get interrupted for an hour, that's the equivalent of 3 hours of normal working.
I can totally believe that.
Right? I mean, I was, when we were doing a bit of the book tour on the 4 day week, we were over in New York in one of these WeWork service offices things. The noise level was right up there. There was people throwing riots in the adjacent you know, work area. How you did any work, I have no idea. So part of what this is about reimagining not just the workspace, but also challenging people to look at the things that they are doing and ditch the things that stop them being productive.
So in your experiment, this is in one of your businesses, were you still maintaining everyone had to be in the office for 4 days a week? Were you giving them total flexibility to, this is pre-pandemic.
I was a dinosaur. I was still working on the assumption and came into the office. So, but interestingly, then it carried on through the pandemic. Obviously, we did this back in 2018. And so what it taught us, interestingly, was that you know, when somebody is always out of the office because they've got their rotated time out, you can't leave a task. So you have to reconstruct your team so that somebody else can pick up the job. Now, COVID hit. It was just like another day in a 4 day week company in a way. So in New Zealand, all but 200,000 workers were being paid either directly or indirectly by the government through the COVID lockdowns. We didn't take a cent. We missed a record profit for the third month by $27,000, and the other 2 months were record profits.
Wow. Because I guess what listening to your TED talk, the thing that really was interesting, and the one I wanted to pick apart a little bit more, was there was a huge element of trust that you built into your staff to allow this experiment to exist. So it wasn't just, guys, you just work 4 days, not five. It was, if you can show me there's a system in place and you can show me that you're more productive as a gift, I will gift you back a day a week. And in it kind of, it was, what was really blew my mind in the talk was the idea that people started to self-manage themselves. You know, they were not watching each other, but they didn't want to be the ones wasting time, perceived wasting time. They wanted to be all seen as productive. Is that?
Well, it's yes-ish.
Am I oversimplifying it?
No. Because at the end of the day, first of all, if you can't trust your employees, why the bloody hell did you recruit them in the first place? Small question. But it's about accountability. So it's really very much personal accountability. But it's not just accountability to me. Because the way we constructed it, we said, look, the goals are team-based. The opt-in, eventually, when we made it permanent, it was an opt-in, is personal. So you're not accountable to me. You're accountable to the person on your left and the person on your right. Because if you don't do what you should do, if you stop them from being productive, the whole team potentially is back working 5 days a week. Now, that's what makes this work, right? Because not only are you giving something that's extraordinarily valuable, we give you the time off that you value. Because to be clear, in our company now, it's reduced hours working. That's 32 hours. You can take a day off. You could take 2 half days off. Working parents actually would prefer to work 5 days, but compressed hours. Then you can take the kids to school. You can pick them up.
Oh, I see. So they can use yep. those extra 8 hours yep. however they want.
We give you the hours. You take the time, subject to the team being yeah. able to deliver it. That's self-managed by the teams. You take the time off that is important.
Oh, interesting.
To you.
So if I'm a client, you're still a Monday to Friday business that can take my calls. It just happens to be there's a roaming team who
yeah.
Have to
interestingly, there's an accounting firm in Western Australia that implemented this, and they then went to a 7-day schedule because some of their staff said, actually, frankly, I'd much prefer to be on the golf course on, you know, Friday and Thursday, and I'd rather be working Saturday, Sunday. So they actually changed to a 7-day week business. So they looked after SMEs. So an SME could actually phone them up at the weekend and get the advice that otherwise they'd have had to take time out for.
Are they still doing that trial?
Yeah.
And it's still success?
Yeah.
It's a sort of perfect storm of one. Everybody suddenly went open plan. You know, we're office designers and we know the history of the cubicle, the cellulized office, through to open plan. We're all going to do this. It's great for cross-pollination. It's great for innovation. And we're all realizing perhaps that isn't the only way. Two, you then hit the work from home, work from office dilemma. Actually, working from home, you have some privacy. You have 3 hours uninterrupted time. There are some benefits to that. And then you hit this other one I think you're hinting at about the distractions of the modern world. And I think there are lots of different type of distractions, whether that's, I mean, they're all around social media and your phone, but whether those are, you know, people competing for your attention. And what I'm hearing here slightly is, oh, actually, we try and strip away those distractions that have become inherent as part of work. And then actually, if we get 32 hours from you, we're doing really well. But there's no reason we shouldn't still just try and be less distracted anyway, you know, and actually just, God forbid, work 40 hours a day without going on news websites and LinkedIn posts. And I think that the other danger is that, oh, we're going to spread this across seven days, is there is no freedom for it. I mean, I'm being deliberately provocative and pushing back on this, but there is no freedom from work. It's like one of the things that I think we found quite exhausting about training as architects and doing masters is that it never goes away. The sense of I've got to deliver these deadlines and these drawings, even when you're having a lovely time with your family, you're thinking, I've still got that work pressure. And it feels to me that that's almost like a retro step in some ways.
Not at all. I mean, the fact that that company went 7 days because they had a bunch of people who wanted to do 2 days work at the weekend rather than in the conventional week. And in a multicultural society, I mean, you know, suddenly Fridays is a bit of an interesting question. Well, that's why the UAE is shifting. It's gone down to 4.5 days and it's heading for 4 days. Partly they started on the issue of because their work week wasn't aligned with the rest of the world. So they had to...
the time difference.
Because Friday was...
Friday and Saturday is a holiday.
Holiday.
In UAE.
So what they've now done is said, we'll make Sunday a holiday as well. And a bit of Friday. And actually, I think a number of the imams are saying, actually, it can't be part Friday. So they've gone, well, we'll give you the whole of Friday off. And that means their work week is now aligned with the rest of the world. But you know, you're right to an extent, right? A lot of this is self-evident. We, in our office, we recognize the fact that, you know, people are spending too much time on the internet. Now, I can say that till I'm blue in the face, but if actually whether you're checking out the Kardashians is, you know, a good thing to do at work, but you could actually be home instead, suddenly you stop looking at it at work. And if you've got to think about what else is coming through into your work that is interrupting that. And a lot of that is grabbing your mobile phone and checking it every 5 seconds because we've been conditioned every time a message comes through, every time an email comes through, that we instantly look at it.
I mean,
so we lock them away. if you want to do it, you know, yeah. lockers down the end of the office.
I think there's a, but I genuinely think there's a bit of like social compliance. Like when I work in the office, I don't feel able to waste time because I'm working with my colleagues. It's obvious if I'm looking at Kim Kardashian on my phone. And actually that being as part of a group, it helps to police those distractions. But maybe, but I mean, there are a number of different ways to do that.
Well, one of the interesting stats you had, and I'm basically stealing lots from your TED talk, but there was it was either your stat or an IBM stat about distractions, how that it's the equivalent of smoking marijuana and trying to work.
Yes, that's right.
I'm paraphrasing wildly. Well, what's the actual
Yeah, look, it was, oh gosh, I'm dragging it back from my memory, but you're quite right. It was basically that when you were working in that sort of environment, because of the amount of distraction that you got, it was reducing your mental capacity and your ability to concentrate. And therefore, when they'd done the studies, they said, well, if you were taking a few puffs of marijuana, actually, that would have reduced your mental capacity, and ditto, so do the issues attached with interruption and overwork. And so that was what they were arguing. You know, stop the things that impact on that and box the work to be work a bit more. Now, I will say, remember that if I'm right, that you're only productive for 3 hours a day and to make up for the fifth day, I only need you to be productive for an additional 45 minutes. So I'm still only getting 3 hours 45 out of you in an 8 hour day. There's plenty of time to socialize. If I can change one of those hours so that instead of being interrupted the way you were, you are able to have what we call the quiet hour, and you're able to concentrate because of the every 11 minutes interruption, 22 minutes to get back to productivity. If you have a quiet hour, that's delivering me 3 hours of output in 1 hour. So suddenly, this is very, very achievable. If I cut out a meeting that I shouldn't attend, and this is the Microsoft experience, which basically was no more than five in a meeting, no meeting longer than half an hour, please use Microsoft Teams. They got a 39.9% improvement in productivity right there. And that's nothing to do with anything other than being quite, you know, focused on what are you trying to achieve in a meeting. And you know, we all know, we've done this. We've gone into these meetings that go on and on and on with no purpose, with lots of people in, highly unproductive. Stop doing that. Focus on the output.
Andrew, sorry, isn't the extension of that, then you just focus on the outputs? And indeed, at business school, it's all about focusing on the outcomes rather than the outputs. It's like, it's no point, you know, you enter 10 competitions and don't win any of them. Well, you know, is that really what we're going to measure? If we should measure outputs and outcomes, then it shouldn't be a 4-day work week. It could be a 2-day work week.
Oh, no, absolutely right. But so we're quite clear here, right? Remember, the key bit is that, you know, when you talk 100-80-100, 100% pay, 80% time, 100% productivity, it's the productivity level that's the critical point, right? Most businesses don't measure productivity. It's the first thing that people say to us when we come in, and they go, well, how do you measure productivity? And you go, well, the big question is, how the hell are you measuring productivity if all you're doing is using time as the surrogate? So the start point of the process is to have some view as to what people are producing in a week. That's your productivity benchmark. Now, if that's the thing that makes the company successful, if that or the thing that enables you to pay your staff, if that's what the key dynamic is, everything else is of no interest. I have to pay you for that. So I'm locking that number down. That's the amount I'm paying you. I'm locking that number down because that's the productivity. Frankly, I don't really care if you can do that in 2 days. I genuinely don't, you know, and we're very clear that, you know, we're going to 4, but is that the end of the journey? Well, clearly not.
I was going to hint on. I've got this. We went to the British Council of Offices I mean, Lucy always takes the mickey because it sounds so, so dull, but it's actually a brilliant conference up in Manchester. But someone made a point about, look, this, we worked 7 days in hunting and in agriculture. We go to 6 days when we worked in the factories. We went to 5 days when we moved into the offices. We're now working from home and we're going down to 4 days. You know, there's conversations about being squeezed and going back to universal basic income and the great Renaissance where we no longer need to work. But are we now entering that sort of abyss?
Well, I wouldn't necessarily call it an abyss. I mean, after all, Keynes actually reckoned that we would be down to 15 hours a week by now. We're nowhere near it. But interestingly, though, if you reckon we are only truly productive for 3 hours a day times five equals 15 hours. So maybe he was right. It's just that the rest of what we do is filler. And, you know, it's possible. Look,
I hope I am. I mean, if I get 3 hours productivity, we're doing really well in a day. It's incredibly hot today. And I think if Ben works 3 hours productively, I'll be absolutely
Do you know what I love is it? I was going to describe, like, do you think, because it's you're kind of like a troublemaker by this 4 day work week. And I don't know why it's so controversial. Were you anticipating the sort of global reaction to this idea? Because it was just you proposing something that you asked quite a controversial question, which should be dead simple. We're just going to go, well, how do you know how productive you are? Well, whatever you're doing in 5 days, that's fine. Yeah. Can you do it in four? Try and do it in four. Well, no. But it's such an easy question to ask every company, and it's really antagonistic for some reason.
Yeah. Look, the thing is, there's a couple of bits. One, if you go back into history, I'm sure every time we went from, you know, 12-hour day to the 10-hour day, from the 7-day week to the 6-day week to the 5-day week, thank you, Henry Ford, there were some bewhiskered businessmen muttering in the back that this was going to spell the ruin of society, right? But we haven't shifted the way we have worked for 100 years, and we are basing our working week on repetitive manufacturing industry from the 1920s. That is clearly not right. The second thing is, did I expect to be here? No. I reckoned we would get one article in the local rag, and I thought we would get something on morning TV, which is not a big thing in New Zealand. It's 50, 60, 70,000 viewers. And I thought that was it. And then this complete media storm happened where we just got people calling up from all over the world wanting to talk about it. It got worse when we announced the result. We were the second most read story in the New York Times after the Trump-Putin summit. I stopped counting when we got well into double figures. And this is the first year, right? Double figure thousands of articles. I've spoken in over 100 countries worldwide. You know you've made it when you're on primetime Colombian talkback radio. And
so the logic behind that is, you know, we're seeing this sort of shift, aren't we, in power between the employer to the employee. And I think that will move around a bit as the recession bites next year. But actually, you kind of captured a zeitgeist of a middle manager feeling decreasing amounts of control over their team or visibility. I guess they're the guys that have been characterized as the people that want their team to come in and resistant to this change. You've got a younger generation who are completely comfortable with being measured on their outputs, having multiple jobs, having passions that are kind of semi-commercial, and they're quite easy with it. So it's a sort of, you know, it's on the cusp of a culture war frontier, isn't it, as much as anything else?
Yeah, a bit. I think it is a bit, but I think it's also a recognition that we are, you know, the fourth industrial revolution is a significant, just as significant change as the first industrial revolution in a way. And what I'm trying to do is to recognize that the alternative to something that provides flexibility within a traditional working arrangement is gig. Now, I am hugely anti-gig because I see what gig or 0 hour contracts are doing to the young people, it's mainly young people who are taking them. We've got the most stressed young generation we've ever had. We appear to allow big digital organizations to pick and choose what rules they want to follow, whether they want to contribute at taxation, whether they want to meet minimum wage standards. And ultimately, they are shifting all of the pressures onto the employees. Now, the reason they can do it is that they wrap themselves in the shroud of work when you want. You know, the convenience factor, you can structure your own life. You can't, because the algorithm behind the scenes will ping you if you don't take the journey that you should have taken and you keep ditching it. You'll get worse and worse and worse and worse and worse in terms of the pecking order for gig contract. So what I'm trying to do here is to say that this is an opportunity for us to deliver that flexibility through the workplace, where minimum wage, holiday, sick pay, all of those sort of things, investment in people is all happening, but deliver the flexibility that is necessary to navigate the modern world. Now, that's quite a lofty ambition, but it does underpin where I'm coming from. I don't like what I see on the other side.
I think because in architecture is traditionally one of the worst industries for just working you like a dog 12 hours a day. And I've worked at big practices.
Job opportunities still available, able partners.
And I've worked at small practices, and the small practice during lockdown, we were gifted trust. It was like, I don't know what you're doing. If as long as you've got your jobs done. And then flexi furlough kind of kicked in, and it was like, well, do you think you could work 3 days a week? And I was like, well, if I did X, Y, and Z, yeah. And suddenly I was asked to look how little or much I could work. But I think asking people to say, I can do it in 4 days, I think is really, it terrifies an industry like an architecture industry, which relies, I think, I'm not being controversial, in just overworking their staff.
Yeah, and we'll give an example of that to people that don't know the industry very well. For example, we would used to, you know, we model designs, we show visualizations. Suddenly the software has developed so quickly that you can do many more options. And instead of making the models by hand, they're 3D printing. So we're way more productive now than we were when we started our career. So, but we don't deliver the same amount and work less. We keep the working hours, and we just we deliver even more within that restaurant.
Whether your customer wants it or indeed or not.
Yeah, well,
because partly I think a bit of this is about justifying, because you often, it's more worse in the law, I think, because in many ways you think about the 6 minute block and all the other things that go through. At the end of the day, a client wants two things. They want what they're looking for, the outcome that they want, and they want to know that what they're paying for it, it gives them value. And they're not interested at all in how long it takes. Zero. I have no interest in that at all. But yet, if you go and talk to many law firms who are struggling with this, they will say, but of course the client wants to know how long it takes me. No, I don't care. Actually, you know, why would I pay a lawyer who takes an hour to give me an opinion more than I would pay a lawyer who takes half an hour to give me the same opinion? I'll go with that one.
I'm going to say that sadly, Andrew, the project managers of the British construction industry don't seem to share your view. I mean, people want to see they're getting value, and they want blood, sweat, and tears. I mean, I'm being a bit controversial because I think it's fun. Obviously, we had corporate jobs that followed the 5 day week, 6 days, 7 days, we're committed to it. We've stepped outside that, we're doing our own business, and we are benefiting from running our own time, being with our family, working late sometimes, getting up early sometimes, and when it's sunny, going off to the pub and being in control. But what my worry could be, and I'm just poking you because you're here, there is a cost of living crisis. We are seeing growing inequality. If you're asked to do 5 days productivity in 4 days, people might end up then going and doing another job for the extra day, or, you know, we have people producing renders and drawings for us who are moonlighting from other practices to help, and you could end up contributing to the problem in some ways. I mean, I know.
So you're saying that if I choose to spend my time in a different way that gives me a different form of stimulation, that's a bad thing?
No, not necessarily, but you...
But you did. I'm poking you. So so that's very clearly what you said. You said that
you're working hard. You're producing 120% of what you...
Yeah, but you're producing the stuff for your normal employer in 4 days, but you're not actually working harder. You're working smarter. And there is a difference between working harder and working smarter. There is a difference between being busy and being productive. And a bit of that forces you to question. All companies need to question, individuals need to question. What is it am I doing? And is this, do I need to do this? Now, you actually are both living, breathing examples of what the problem is for mainstream businesses. Because here you are, I'm assuming you know what you're doing. Assuming you're good architects.
The best.
And in which case, you no longer work for the organizations you used to. So they're losing some of the, I'll take that on red. You're the best talent. The two of you, they've lost the pair of you.
Yeah, you're here first.
Yeah.
Right? Now, that's the big thing that's coming through. So do I believe that the Great Resignation, this whole question of massive turnover, huge amounts of turnover that is occurring, especially at the younger age groups at the moment. Do I think this is a long-term trend? No, I don't. I think it's a peak at the moment. But clearly, somebody starting out in a career, when I was, in the dark ages, when I was putting my, sleeve things on and sharpening my quill pen, when I came out of uni, you could go to the careers book and it would say, get a job with X. And it would map out your career from age 21 to when you retired.
Yeah, the idea that you have a job for more than 2 years now.
Yeah, so we all know that we're going to chop and change a little bit on this. So now the problem that an organization faces, and by the way, this is across everything. It goes from... it goes from hospitality all the way through to the professions, but equally through manufacturing, almost anything you want to look at. Your biggest problem is that you've got to attract and retain the best quality staff. Because if you don't, you're then ending up spending a lot of time retraining, recruiting, all of those sort of things. And so part of this is to say, how do you keep those people engaged? Now, a bit of that is you need time to do your MBA, right? So if I've got a day a week, instead of trying to cram my MBA around my job or leave my job, I can now actually potentially do it and my job. I'm getting a bit more fulfillment.
Did you find that it's a staff retention device? If people genuinely gone, I saw you on the news, I love the idea of having a bit of flexibility in my week. I'll join and I'll stay longer. Have you felt that effect?
Look, I mean, I feel like Eddie Izzard a bit. You know, what sort of business? We do death, buddy. because we're a trust company. God, we are boring. You know, I mean, 130-year-old, dull trust company.
I tell you what, Surrey trusts and... Canadians are getting a
hard time. Yeah, they're all going to get hard time.
There's some poor guy listening who fits that Venn diagram.
Yeah, actually, that's very true. But he doesn't know where I live, right? Sorry. So, it's not a sexy industry, right? But we went from that to being viewed as a cutting-edge business with, incredible brand recognition in New Zealand for, and now around the world for what we were doing. And people then said, actually, let's look beyond the industry they're in. Let's look to the mindset of what's happening in that business. And therefore, we got incredibly good candidates coming forward who would never in a pink fit have joined a trust company. Now, you're getting a thing. There's a law firm in New Zealand that has just announced this week that it will pay $10,000 to any junior lawyer that can persuade a friend to join the firm. It's got that bad. You have a look at the statistics that in the south of England, people taking jobs that are four-day week jobs, those sort of things have gone up 200% in literally almost the last 6 months. And, you know, you then find that there's a couple of American companies, I think Awin is the one that's coming to mind, that had a 283% increase in applicants when they announced a four-day week. So this is an interesting dynamic now, right? You know, I was interviewed earlier on this week on New Zealand radio, and, you know, how is the issue? You're about to do the interview and there's an ad running in the background. And there was this guy going, hey, you know, isn't it great to build things? And, you know, come on and when you've built the thing, it's great to go down the beach and do something. And why don't you become a tradesman in Western Australia? And that was running on Tauranga Radio in New Zealand. So now it's not just competition between companies. It's competition between countries.
Well, I was going to say as well, I talked to my wife about who's coming on the podcast. I mentioned, oh, we're talking about the author of the four-day week. And she was with my brother's wife, who's a nurse. My wife's used to be a teacher, is now running her own, like, beautiful little nursery. She's like, oh, well, it's all right for you guys. And like, you have to work. You don't have that luxury as a nurse. And it was the most controversial topic that it was like, oh, do you know how lucky you guys got it? That you can understand your productivity and try and... And I couldn't believe that it's in any way antagonistic. I thought it's a brilliant idea.
It isn't. And of course, Gothenburg is the answer to the nurses, which is the Gothenburg experiment, which is often quoted the other way. So it was a care home in Gothenburg, and they went to a four-day week. What they identified at the end of it was, and it was a trial, they identified that, yes, they needed to recruit more nurses. So a lot of people grab that and go, yeah, see, we need to recruit more nurses. But the subtext is really quite interesting. What they found was that they didn't actually have to recruit 20% more nurses because their turnover of nurses dropped. They therefore didn't have to have locums. Their sick days dropped. The locums cost more. So they found at the end of the day that the true cost to the organization was under 10%. But wait, there's more. The medical outcomes were significantly better. So the society that got the benefit, the government, if you will, got the benefit of the better medical outcomes. It was a privately run facility, so they got the higher cost. But if you translated that to the NHS, different ball game, because both the payment at the bottom and the output at the top both go to the same group, you know, the government, effectively. So, you know, we were short, 15,000 nurses here. Why? Well, because they all got burnt out. What would have happened if actually they'd worked proper hours instead of getting burnt out? They'd have stayed in the profession. You wouldn't have had to bring in a pile of nurses from offshore. And actually, therefore, the medical outcomes would arguably have been better. Do you want to be operated on by the doctor who's been working 20 hours straight or the one who's fresh? I know where I'm going. So part of this is to realize that you've got to look at this far more than just, do I need more doctors and nurses? Yes. Should we have more doctors and nurses? Yes. What's the benefit to society? Another horrifying statistic. The Americans kill, I think it's as much as 250,000 people a year in the health service as a consequence of misdiagnosis or mistreatment occasioned by stress and overwork.
Yeah, I can totally believe that.
Now, I believe the numbers here, they're not quite there, but they are quite material. Now, we've just spent billions of pounds focusing on about, 140,000, 160,000 deaths. Some of those would normally have happened. So we're looking at excess deaths of sort of, 70,000, 80,000. So arguably less than what's happening in the health service year on year on year because we're not thinking about how do we make that sustainable.
It's such a logical and a clever and sort of, well, obvious argument once you make it. You touched on something interesting there about the geographies of this. You know, we're Europeans at heart, in some ways, and you know, we're quite comfortable with the French working a 9-day fortnight. We know what that happens in Northern Europe and the benefits that gives wider society. You've talked about the US. I mean, the US have a completely different working culture. I get a sense that presenteeism is still much more of a feature there. I mean, the holiday, the annual leave is a fraction of what you would get in the UK. There are big splits, aren't there, now between the Republican and the Democratic Party. It's almost getting more traditional in some ways. Mm. Selling this concept in America, I'd love to follow you around.
Well, we did try. I'll come back to it in a while. One of the, just to your point, we were up with the, I think it was the US Chamber of Commerce in Washington, and we were talking to one of their senior guys about this, and he was saying how difficult his job was. And we sort of said, well, you know, why? And he said, well, you know, sometimes I even have to talk to to Democrats. Okay.
It's like, well, you have to squeeze it into 4 days.
Yeah. Anyhow, interestingly, we ran the American pilot. It's halfway through at the moment. The statistics coming out are looking very good. We've got a lot of interest in the States now. I mean, the article's running almost constantly. I did two US interviews last week.
Could you just tell us what that pilot looks like?
Yeah. Well, the pilots are all the same, right? Sorry. So how the pilot works is basically, because it's a scary thing to do a 4-day week for chief executives, we've got to make it safe. So the way we make it safe is we get a cohort of companies to organizations to run a 6-month trial, and they do it together. So what we do is we select a cohort of businesses from applicants. We then do a base level of research of what's happening in the organization now. I'll come back to the research program. And then
this is for metrics, so they've got metrics they can base.
Yeah, metrics and the basis. And also so that you can prove what's going on to your stakeholders, very important. Then what we do is we run a series of workshops where myself or other people who've done it before talk on particular aspects of it. We find each company a mentor in their industry that has done it, that's not a competitor, so that they've got somebody to refer to. And then we commence the trial. Now, the trial is monitored by a global research program which put together out of Boston College with Oxford and Cambridge universities. And we in each country, we then add a local university. So in Australia, it's University of Queensland and University of Sydney.
Oh, so you really build a community of people doing this test. That's really
it's University College in Dublin. And so what we do is build this community and we run them through together. Now, that makes it a little easier. First of all, everybody can see it's a big pilot. You've got the research. You're not alone. You can go to your board, go to your shareholders and say, look, you know, we're doing this and we're doing it for very good commercial reasons. We're doing it to see if we can make our company more productive. We're doing it to see what happens on things like, you know, stress, sick
days. And the third reason, the medium is the message. By doing this, we are indicating to our staff that we're progressive and we're looking forward.
That's exactly right. Your worst thing that can happen is that your employees go, well, at least they tried. And by the way, there's a lot of personal responsibility attaching the employees on that. So, you know, if you don't take it seriously, then it's going to fail, right? And we had one team in my company.
Well, that's what I wonder on the pilots, where they're working like buggery for 4 days.
Well, of course.
No, I'm teasing because I'm teasing, but it's so valid. And I'm interested to hear about how these pilots work.
But of course they are. But the point is, it doesn't stop. My company's been doing this for 4 years now. And there are lots of companies been doing it because... look, I'll give best thing is to give an example. Right? I've got a chap, he's a grandfather, he's down in Dunedin. And he takes two afternoons off for his 4 days. Walks home, so he gets himself a little bit fit. And then his granddaughter comes down, and they do grandfather-granddaughter stuff two afternoons a week, have tea together, and then she goes home. When he tells the story, he cries. Because that's something he would never have thought he could do, that he would never have the chance to do. Now, that's what keeps this going, right? It's not just how he feels about that. He tells that story to you. And I always have a view that nobody ever, I'm ex-military in the dim and distant days, goes over the top for a flag or a mission statement. They go over the top for the person on their left and the person on their right. And so this is about the sharing that goes on in the company or any organization about what it is this gives you. And this gives you things that you can't put a price on. It's not another bloody gym membership. You know, it's not a free lunch in the cafeteria.
It creates a deep sense of loyalty to your employer or your team, because they've provided an opportunity that's connected you.
Well, also, the first company I worked for, they're an architect, but at 6, he would lock the door and he'd be like, you have to get out. And it meant that from 4 till 6, you had this mad panic because you're trying to get everything done. And then the next day, if you didn't get it finished, you'd be like, well, why didn't you get it finished? And it's like, I didn't know how to do that. Well, next time you'll learn, and we can always ensure that you get everything done within a time limit. It was great. And the reason I think it's exciting is, if you can't get everything done in 4 days, why? Well, let's build some systems around that. And then everyone benefits. And then there's like a let's try and be better mentality. Whereas if you've got Sandra, who's awful and not doing it 5 days a week, you're annoyed. Well, why is she being lazy? Whereas if everyone's like motivated.
Well, Ben, let's call you out. We have a small team, and we're 10 months old, and we've got some people helping us. Shall we go to a 4-day week?
I'm a total convert. You know I'm a convert. I mean...
What? Because I know we're coming to the end here.
This will be the last questions, yeah.
Whether you have people in your pilots who are, you know, a six-person architecture team, and short of reading your book, which I should probably do, whether there's any immediate practical steps that people listening to this, or indeed me, could do to start this.
Well, I noticed on the comments on LinkedIn and stuff when you posted, there are architecture practices. The amount of goodwill comments you get back is fascinating.
Short answer is yes, there are architecture practices that do it. I mean, they rethink. Look, the key thing here is you can't sort this. You have to engage with all your team, because it's about what's stopping them from being productive. It's very easy to do the Jack Ma 996, Elon Musk 100 hours a week. Well, they can do that. Damn it, they're sitting on top of multi-billion companies with a whole pile of people underneath, you know, flogging their guts out for them. But this is about how do you make things better for the people who are working for you, whilst at the same time making your organization more efficient. And I will, you know, spoiler alert from the book. I mean, the end of the book has got a chapter called Cows Need Milking Twice a Day. And that was prompted by a conversation I had in a politician's office in Wellington, where a chap sat next to me and said, what are you here for? I said, the 4-day week. And he did what they always do. They stare off into the middle distance for a bit, and then they go, it wouldn't work in dairy. And I said, well, why wouldn't it work in dairy? Well, you know, cows need milking twice a day. And I said, well, okay. Go back 100 years, there's two blokes in a paddock going mush with a pail. And then you get a little bit of, I don't know, electric fences, so they don't wander off a bit. And then you get an electric milking parlour, and that's a bit quicker. And then you get a bit more mechanisation. And then you get A2 milk. And then you get better feedstuffs, and then you get things like the halter technology, which means you can control your cows and take them to the milking parlor while sitting in your lounge room looking at your mobile phone. If you think that the way you work today is the pinnacle of human achievement, then you stick with a 5-day week. because that's what you're saying, that there is no better way. And I refuse to believe that. I believe there is always a better way.
Well, I think in terms of ending a podcast, you've absolutely nailed that one. Andrew, thank you so much for coming on. That's been so fascinating. And I'm pretty sure this isn't the last time we'll talk about this as we try and implement it. Can I ask, when's the results of the US one? Because I'd imagine they're the most resistive.
The first results will be out in about September is where we're looking at the moment. We've had some preliminary results from a large organization on the trial. We can't identify it, which, because it was large enough, they were able to do some early releasing of data, and that's looking very strong. So it will be interesting to see where it goes, but I'm quietly confident that
we'll grab you on your next US media tour.
And then when it comes out. I'm a converted cynic, so thank you very much for coming.
Great. Thank you
so much.